Hey investors, Brett Lear from Watson Estates, and you're listening to the largest and fastest growing podcast for Toronto real estate on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. As a broker and investor myself, I want to know what's going on in the market. And one of these big things that's left me with some question marks is the tax-free first home savings account, the FHSA. There's still a lot unknown about this product, which is set to be released in 2023. And so I thought, why not bring on someone who has studied this topic at length to give us the high level overview and maybe get into a little bit of speculation on what this will offer us as investors in the real estate industry. Well, Renee Sylvester Williams joins us. She's 15 years in journalism. She's written for Globe and Mail, Flair, Canadian Living, Money Sense, Wealthsimple, and Forbes. And we have a wonderful conversation on what is this product? How does it kind of fit into our investing? And I popped some kind of unique questions on how this would work for you as an investor. So if you're like me and you're like, what the hell is the tax-free first home savings account? How can I use it? And what is it going to look like next year? This is going to be a wonderful episode. When you love this episode, please share it on Instagram. You can tag us at Watson Estates. Enjoy the show. Renee, thanks for joining us on the show. How you doing?
Hi, Bradley. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I am thrilled that you could come and join us. And I'm starting to find a love in chatting with reporters and writers, because you guys just, you know what's going on. You fill me in. And I thought, why not do the same for my friends here? And we're going to discuss a pretty exciting topic. But before we do, tell us a little bit about you and how you spend your days.
Thanks. Well, I am a journalist and a writer. I have been writing about money, investments, personal finance for more than a decade. And I recently wrote an article, which is why I'm here, about the tax-free first home buyers plan, right? Which is another way. It's very early days, doesn't roll out until next year, 2023, but it is another plan that is supposed to help first time Canadians buy a home.
Yeah. And that's kind of how we got connected. But every so often you come across, because we read articles on our regular show, and every so often you hit one, you're like, we need to get a little bit more information on this one. And I thought that this is one of those topics that require a bit of a deep dive, but it is early on, as you mentioned. And that's also why I think there's a lot of gray areas and question marks about how it's going to look. So our audience knows we're going to talk about the tax-free first home savings account. And maybe before we kind of get into some of the nitty-gritty, and I do want to get into speculating on what this could look like. We've got an election around the corner from the time we're recording this episode. And there's a lot of, this is obviously provincial, but this is happening at the federal level. So I guess there's a difference there, but things shift so quickly. So tell us, what do we know, or what is the first home savings account? What is that product?
Okay, so the best way to think about I always want to say first time, it's not first time, the first home savings account. This was an announcement made by the federal Liberal government in their 2022 budget. So at this recording, I would say less than 2 months ago. And what it is an account where Canadians can open this account and put in up to $40,000 over 5 years, right? And what it is to break it down, is you put in up to $8,000 a year over 5 years, right? And you get a tax deduction when you put in the money. You can take out the money tax-free, right? And the idea is that you let the money compound in there. So when you are ready to buy your home, you can use this money towards your down payment.
Yeah. And the way that I've heard it kind of spelled is it's a mix between your tax-free savings account, which is an incredibly powerful wealth generating tool for people who have money to build wealth. I guess that's kind of the caveat. Mm-hmm. And this home buyer plan that's built into the RRSP and the tax deduction side. So it's this kind of merge between the two. Okay, so when is this program set to roll out? What is the kind of release date for this?
Yeah, so there isn't a particular month when it's going to be released, but it's going to be rolled out in 2023. When exactly, nobody knows just yet. For your listeners, there's just a lot of detail to be worked out here. So I think right now the federal government and everybody else who's involved are going to figure out how what this product is going to look like, what you're going to see on your fine print when you open an account before, you know, Canadians can walk into their bank and buy this as a product.
Yeah.
Or not walk in, just open, like go online with their phone and buy
and it. Set it up. And I would think it would probably be similar in the way you just set it up at a bank, like your regular bank account. I'm picturing how any of these accounts are done. So $8,000 per year is a limit. That's a maximum.
That is your max limit. And something to keep in mind is you cannot roll that forward, right? So let's say you put in $5,000 this year, and that's all you put in. You cannot roll $3,000 into year two. So you have to put in, as of now, you have $8,000. If you cannot put in the full $8,000, you cannot roll what's left over into following years, unlike the TFSA where you can roll that.
And one of the things, Renee, you taught me that I think is valuable, this is good insight, is there is a time limit that money can sit in this account from the creation to the use. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you just have forever, or how I would picture an RRSP. So what does that look like?
Right. So you open up your FHSA and all that stuff. And if you don't use the funds in it for a first home purchase within 15 years of first opening your account, you need to wind it down, right? So you need to close it, or you need to transfer to your RSP.
Yeah. And this needs to be
there's a time limit.
And this needs to be your primary residence or any property.
As of now, it is supposed to be for your primary residence. I believe the way it is set up, and we're kind of getting into the speculation area, is the goal is to help Canadians buy their first home. Yeah. The goal isn't to help investors buy additional properties.
Yeah. So one of the downsides, I'd say, to the RRSP is you have to put the money back. So if you borrowed, let's say, $40,000, that money needs to be returned over, is it 15 years for the RRSP?
It's $35,000.
Oh, there's a limit of $35,000.
Your home buyer's plan lets you pull out $35,000.
Okay.
Right? That's your max. That's your max that you can pull out. So 40 would be nice, but it's $35,000 out of your home buyer's plan. So if you take whatever amount that you take out of your home buyer's plan, you have 15 years to pay that back. So a certain amount every year comes out of your account. Like when I bought my condo, I took money out of my RSPs to the home buyer's plan. And every year, a certain amount has to be paid back.
Yeah. That payback portion is one of the things that I guess has made me a little less excited. Now, I know about the RSP product. RSP loans is another thing. And that was, I think, a creative way for people to try and get a deduction out of the RSP, but pay back some of that money. So that was another kind of strategy people have. But I think this, if I'm reading into it right, this first home savings plan will kind of replace the need to do that. This is another question. I wonder if you could borrow the money, dump it in the first home savings account, and pay back a portion of the loan like people were doing at the RSPs. I mean, these are, again, speculating, but creative ways to wrap around that product.
There are creative ways. I mean, theoretically, what you can do is if you bought an RSP and then you open up an FHSA, right? You can transfer money.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't have to be specifically for your home buyer's plan. You can transfer money from your RSP into your FHSA and then take that out. And then because you haven't taken money out through the home buyer's plan, you don't have to pay that money back.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's right? a very good point.
Yeah, it's just a direct transfer. So you can take that money out. However, what you need to be, anybody who wants to follow that path is you don't get a second deduction here.
You're not getting the tax deduction again.
You're not getting the tax deduction on the FHSA. My right hand is the FHSA.
But I think that's going to be a very helpful tool where people were, you know, I put all this money into my RRSPs and now I'm missing out on the benefit, you know, I'm going to have to pay it back if I ever use it. I don't want to use that product. This allows them to strategically be able to pull that money and move it over.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why it's always good to sort of sit down and figure out your personal situation. So obviously I'm going to say, talk to a financial advisor if you have one, or get one and talk to them, because you might be in a situation where you want to take advantage of that, right? You might be at a certain stage in your life where you're like, do I have the income and or do I have the income to pay back 15 years of the, if I take it out of my home buyer's plan, or can I just move that money into the FHSA and still take it out? And then I don't have to pay that money back. Right. Yeah. So whatever other money that you have coming in as income, you don't have to put a portion of that back into your home buyer's plan.
And how I would also, just thinking outside the box here, is folks that are, this is 2022 and you're thinking, well, you know, this product doesn't come out until 2023, so I don't need to do anything, but I'm also missing out. Knowing that there seems to be, obviously this is all very early, but it seems to be this ability to move it, is put it in the RSP, get the deduction this year, and next year be able to move it over into that, that I'm going to have trouble with this acronym the entire episode. The first home savings account, the FHSA. And so you don't have to feel bad necessarily.
Don't feel bad. I will let you know, when I was interviewing my sources for this article, I think all of us like tripped our tongues. We got tongue tied on FHSA. And the reason why I can say FHSA so smoothly now is I think I have said it several dozen times.
All right. We'll all get there. We'll get there.
You'll get there. Yeah. Sorry. Could you repeat the question?
No, so actually there wasn't a question. There was more of a, just kind of a thought. I hope people don't see this as it's coming later and therefore just get caught flat footed. But one question that I do have is, we know we, based on this, we can move it from the RSP into this first home savings account. Can we move it the other direction, right? We've got a 15 year limit. Mm-hmm. How mobile, can it go both ways?
It can. So let me address the first bit. Remember what I said earlier is you have got $8,000 yearly limit and it doesn't roll forward. There's no reason why you can't put in. One of the sources that I spoke to, they said, you know, you can put in $5,000. There's no reason why you can't take maybe $3,000 from your RSPs and then hit that $8,000 max.
Yeah.
Right. So there's no reason why you can't do that if that works for you. However, so you, let's say you've hit that 15-year limit, right? You've decided that you're not going to buy a home because it doesn't make sense for you financially, or you are using a TFSA because it's been around longer, and if you have maxed that out, you've probably got more money compounded in there, or you're using a different combination of plans and whatnot. So your FHSA is sitting there for 15 years. So to answer your question, yes, you can move it back to your RSP. And what's really interesting, and I don't know if this is going to be addressed down the line, is you can take all the money that's in your FHSA, including all the compounding in there. We love compound interest, and move it over to your RSP. And what it will do, it does not eat up your RSP contribution rate as of now.
Yeah.
All right. So what we were talking about, let's say you've got $100,000 of contribution space in your RSPs because you started your RSP when you were 20 years old and you haven't maxed it out, and you've got, I don't know, at the end of say 15 years, let's say you've got $70,000 in your FHSA because of compound and all that stuff, you can move that entire $70,000 over, and right now your $100,000 of contribution will not be eaten up by it.
Yeah, that's a key point, guys, just to kind of reiterate that. So what we're saying here is that because you're moving it from this account, you're essentially buying yourself additional contribution room in the RSP with the money that gets transferred over. I guess to add, complexity and where there's some mystery here is, one, I would think yes is the answer. Can you use your RSP and the homebuyer account? I wonder if you can use both of them, which essentially would add an additional $40,000 to your 35. We're talking about moving them between the two, but that doesn't take away from the function of the other account. I would think, yeah, but I don't know if there's been any update on that.
The way to think about it is, I think everybody agrees that $40,000 is not going to buy you a house in Toronto.
Yeah.
Or Vancouver or Cambridge or Milton.
Or anywhere that you could
throw. Or Ajax. Okay, I think we all know that, right? But I think the idea is like, okay, great. It gives you more money to play with because you're not paying taxes when you take it out. You get a tax deduction when you put it in, right? So that theoretically gives you more money to play with. And you can combine it with your TFSA or with the home buyer's plan in your RSPs. You cannot do all three.
Yeah, and I know you had an interesting take on this question of affordability, because obviously in the platform, the pitch was it's going to help affordability. Do you think this is going to address the affordability challenges that we have in the GTA?
Personally, no. And for your readers, obviously, I'm not a financial advisor nor a real estate expert. Personally, I don't think it's going to make a fundamental difference in affordability. The FHSA is it's a long game, all right? Because again, you can't just dump $40,000 in there on year one and then let it sit and chill. Right, you can't roll that. You can't roll over the unused amount either, and again, let it sit and chill. You have $8,000. That's your limit, and you put that $8,000 for 5 years, and then you get the $40,000. You let it combine. You let it compound for 15 years. So this is a long play.
Yeah.
Right. I think just because of the tax-free aspect of it, more people will probably lean towards doing that, because again, it gives you more money to play with. That's good. But I think what it might do is there'll be increased demand for homes. And again, we're also not taking into consideration right now if you can pass the stress test, what mortgage rates are going to look like, because we as of like when we're recording this, mortgage rates have gone up. Like my personal, I'm on a variable rate and my mortgage rate has gone up 0.8%. from January, and we're recording this later in the year. So there's all these factors in mind as well. But I don't think somebody who doesn't have the down payment to buy a home in the immediate future, this isn't going to help them, because this, like I said, the FHSA, we're talking years here. We're not talking immediate future.
Yeah.
So 15 years from now, yeah, probably, I think. But if you're thinking to buy a home in the next 5 years, well, let's say 5 years, no, I don't think it's going to help.
I agree with what you're saying. I just think you're too nice about it. I think it's very much a political move in the way of claiming that it would do anything for affordability. I really believe this will support folks who would otherwise probably already have been able to qualify for a home. It's just a movement of money that is a beautiful thing for folks who have it, but nobody is going to make that $40,000 appear. I guess where there's a benefit is for folks who have a high income amount, you get the tax deduction, which you were getting in the RSP. Now you've just essentially doubled your contribution amount. So that money needs to come from somewhere, and it will obviously will benefit people who have the most deductions to gain, which is those that have the higher income. So just
that is a potential. I think where it may work for people is like if you have a TFSA, as an example, does it make sense? Like, okay, let me walk this back. If you already have a TFSA, great, it's been around long enough and you've probably got something compounded in there. That's great. That's awesome. And you can withdraw that tax-free, same situation with the FHSA. But if you are at the stage where you're considering opening up a TFSA versus an FHSA, and your goal is to buy a house, that's where you may want to consider one or the other.
Right.
Now, I mean, if you've got the income, you might as well open all three, I guess.
And that's just that statement shows you the benefit to those who have high income, right? Because you take advantage of all of them.
Yeah.
Where I can see this having limits is you, because of the primary benefit being the tax deduction, many people, myself included, I have very little interest in investing in RSPs. And I also am not an accountant or financial advisor, but I'm just sharing my personal opinion. I don't know, unless it's being used for the tax deduction side. What this product is doing is it has the tax-free element, the gains, which was already available, but you're pushing folks into this avenue of we're going to invest in order to purchase a home in 5 years, 10 years. But if you don't, it's going in your RSP. And so we've now moved it into this, now I've created an RSP. I guess the only saving grace is that it hasn't affected my contribution room in my RSP. So, but that will be, in the RRSP that those gains would be taxable, would they not?
If you withdraw it eventually, yeah, we consider this income. It would be considered income.
So the way I'm thinking, again, this is just talking out loud here, thinking about you've transferred away from your free gains in exchange for a tax deduction that really didn't benefit you on the lower income bracket and push yourself into a taxable income in the retirement years or later years in life. So to your point, you need to discuss this with someone who is financially savvy and can look at your particular situation. But anytime there's a new product like these, I think it's a great thing because it's just one more tool that Canadians will have. And let's get into some of the kind of questions here. Here's one for you. And now we're getting into a little bit of speculation because obviously we don't have all of the fine print, but you've spent hours thinking about this. So I'll use you as a soundboard. How do you see the tax deduction element impacting the stress test or qualification? You said it quickly there. Would having 5 years leading up to the purchase of tax deductions play in, or do you see it potentially playing into your ability to qualify for the mortgage? Do you want me to rephrase that?
Yeah, could you?
So for every year, let's say we're doing the full 8,000, right? Where we have an individual who's making 90,000 a year. Every year for 5 years, their income now is 82,000 because they've reduced 8,000 on their taxes. Mm-hmm. Are there scenarios where an individual would or could have qualified under the stress test at their income levels, but because they had taken the deduction, no longer qualify? So the product itself could impact your ability to even purchase a house. And that comes in where that kind of stems from is this idea of RSP contributions. But for me as a self-employed person, the more deductions I claim, which is fantastic, the harder it is for me to get a mortgage. So I wonder if that's will come up as a shock as people are saving to make that purchase.
Mm-hmm. First, and I think I made a mistake, so let me just clarify myself. You cannot use the home buyer's plan and the FHSA together. I think I did say that. So I just want to make sure that very clearly.
You cannot. Okay.
You cannot. Yeah. That's my fault. I just keep that. You cannot.
No, that's a good, that's good clarification. Okay.
Yeah. So, So under the rules, you can't use the HPB and the FHSA, right? You can obviously use the tax-free with it. So that may make your question moot. So that's one option. Fundamentally, when you get a mortgage, you just have to make sure that you qualify for it, right? Mm-hmm. The banks aren't particularly, the banks want to make sure that you can qualify for the mortgage that you're applying for. Right. So you have to make sure that you can pass the stress test. You have to, I believe, show proof of income. You have to show, you have to show that you've got the down payment needed and all of that stuff. So if you qualify, that should not be an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not expecting, again, this is speculation. There's no for sure answer, but I love having these kinds of conversations on these, what it could look like, because this is in this confusion, I think, is where we find opportunities in the investment world. So now, how do you see it playing out if, let's say, I was going to purchase it with a partner or their name is on title? Any thought to how that would play out if I'm not purchasing it in my name, but someone else's?
That's a great question. Right now, and again, we're just speculating. If both of you are considered and fall under first-time home buyers, and both of you have this plan, I don't see why not. I don't see why both of you, or how many of you are going in on this home. We'll just keep it to two people for now, just because it's easier. I don't see why both of you can't have a plan. Each of you have a plan and take that compounded amount of money and put it towards a down payment.
Yeah.
I don't see why.
I don't see why not either.
Again, it's early days, but I don't see why. If you've got your individual plans and you're buying a home together, I don't see why not. I mean,
yeah.
I, again, not an advisor, but I don't see how it's different from, say, tap each of you have TFSA and taking the money out of that.
Yeah. So I think, I agree. And that to me would line up with what we're seeing on the RRSP side. So that makes sense. I wonder if you purchase it and use someone else's name. I feel like they would require you to be on title. I guess the real question would be like, what if one person's not a first time buyer and the other is? What, like, these are the details that we just won't know until.
Actually, I think they did address that. So one sec, let me make sure that I am giving you the right information.
Okay, while you're looking that up, you've already taught me some stuff, so I'll share some more details.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to make sure that it's very, very clear, because we were talking about it so quickly that I may have given wrong information. You cannot combine an FHSA and the home buyer's plan.
Yes, right.
People that I've spoken to say that it would have been better if you could, but as of now, you can't.
Yeah. And that's so one of the other points here was 18 years of age is the minimum age to begin contributing. So you can't just throw it into an account for your kids unless they're 18. So there needs to be this kind of, it's not like an RESP where you can kind of have this lead time when they're young, which is unfortunate. I would love to do that, especially now having all of these children running around. But there was also a question on age restrictions on limits, like upper limits, which you've clarified. Currently, there is no upper limit. There is no age restriction on when someone could get that first house.
Yeah, exactly. So when the idea was first floated, there was talk about capping it at Canadians 40 and under, but because they haven't put in, they didn't announce an age cap, speculation is if Canadians of any age can leverage it. Yeah.
And then I guess one last point, as you know, Renee, a lot of our listeners are invested in real estate and we love this kind of aspect, is how would this play into someone purchasing an investment property? And we're not going to get a full answer here today, but I'm curious. It would be interesting and maybe counterproductive if a person could purchase a, call it triplex or a fourplex, a residential property, and they live in a small portion of it and still use this product. I think whether you can or not will be determined on the government's view on that as a strategy, whether they like people doing that or not.
Well, again, I go back to what the intent of the FHSA is, which is to help people buy their first home.
Yeah.
And first home is primary home.
Right.
Right? It's not investment property. It's not a cottage. That has supposed to be a primary home. And again, because we're in the wild west of real investment speculation here, is if it is your primary home and you're living in it, I'm not sure how they would stop you from buying it as primary home and then, I don't know, Airbnb out your finished basement.
Right.
I don't know. It could be that if you're buying a triplex, somebody might pick out like, wait, hold on, you're buying a triplex. You obviously can't live in all three of these. What are you going to do with it? I don't know if that's going to trigger questions.
Yeah.
But again, if you're buying a house and you've got a completed basement, what's stopping you from renting that out?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I guess, will it link to the CRA and like your primary residence being a smaller portion of the home? It's just weird because these accounts don't necessarily speak to the primary residence exemption, like at the federal level, right? Like, it's almost like, how do you monitor and track it? I think where, if we were going to leave our audience with something, where there could be an opportunity in here is, one, obviously there's going to be increased demand from folks who already could purchase a house. Now it's gotten a little bit easier. So there's some market shifts there, but there could, we'll have to wait and see the details. There could be a potential for people to purchase a property in which is a primary residence that they also have rental income as a first time home, be able to use this product, get tax deductions and stuff like that. And if that happens, then that's a win for the investment world and could be a benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it'll be interesting when, as we said earlier on, when the fine print kind of rolls out on this, again, 2023. And again, every time a new sort of savings and financial account rolls out, changes happen. Again, when the TFSA rolled out, I believe, was it 5,000? 5,000 was the original yearly?
I think it was 10. It was very small.
It was very small. And then it increased. Yeah. And now it's 6,000. Like, things change. Things change as demand changes, as products change, and all that stuff. So I think what's going to happen, just like all other financial products that have been on offer, is it's going to roll out, and then they'll make changes as needed.
Yeah. Awesome. Renee, this has been a good chat. Our listeners are probably going to want to follow some of your articles as you're continuing to report on real estate here in the GTA. Where can everyone find you? I know you've got a newsletter on the go right now. Where are our listeners best to locate you?
To find me on a regular basis, I do have a newsletter. It's called The Budget, and it's on Substack. So if you just type in The Budget, you'll find me. You can also find me in multiple publications. I have written for Money Sense, Lowest Rates. I'm pretty much everywhere.
Very good.
The newsletter is the best place to find me.
Now you're a podcaster too. Look at you go.
You know what? I love being on podcasts. I just don't have the patience to edit. So.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. We'll do it for you. We got someone that. For that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Renee. Guys, if you enjoyed this episode, please support it. You can share it. You can tag us as well at Watson Estates. And if you're following this on YouTube, hit the like, comment if you have any questions. And I love to talk about the what ifs. That's why we wanted to have this conversation early on before the details. So if you have any ideas that can we can share with our audience on what potentially this could look like or where there's opportunities, we always would love to hear them. So Renee, thank you for taking the time today to join us on the show. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks, Bradley.